Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Alex, how you holding up?
Good, man. I'm grooving now.
Cool.
I was editing till about 12:30 last night.
Oh man. Hey, appreciate you getting our main feed episode up as well. A couple people were like, "Where's the episode?" Like, there, yeah.
Wait, what? What's this?
Just people knocking at our door first thing in the morning about the episode.
I mean, it's a good problem to have. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. But like, just like, give me a second to think about it.
It's not exactly in my Q zone.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed. Call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and director of office supplies, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin Jane's Jamaican Jan son, Princess.
And with us as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
You remember last week when that girl went missing? Guess whose candles they used for the vigil?
Every week they found her.
Oh, they found her?
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week we'll spend a lot of time on our main topic, and then we'll head to some listener-provided trivia to end the show. But for this week's main topic, she took me back. I'm going to take that again. For this week's main topic, she took me by the hand. She made me a man. Jan Levinson, I presume. That's right. We're talking about Vice President of Sales at Dunder Mifflin, a.k.a. Jan Levinson Gould, a.k.a. Lan Jevinson, a.k.a. Jasmine Winsong, Urkel Grew, Ice Queen, Godzillery, Hillary Rodham Clinton, as Michael refers to her.
In the pilot, yeah.
Played by the great Melora Hardin. Melora Hardin is an Emmy-nominated actress for her role in Transparent. She's the daughter of two actors. She's been on
and the aunt of James Hardin.
No. she's been on great shows like Monk. She's been on Broadway and Chicago the Musical. She's had a bit of a singing career too. She's sang
as Jasmine Winsong.
She's sang in movies and has sang a couple national anthems for some hockey games. So,
oh, wow.
Just like Jan Levinson.
Scranton Wilkes-Barre Penguins, I heard.
The hostages are under the stadium.
I wouldn't be surprised if in the show Jan had sang the anthem for those hockey games.
Yeah, yeah.
Why not? Sold her candles at the stadium. She also, Melora Hardin released a album of Doris Day covers.
Under her own label, yeah. Well, I think one thing that's significant about this episode is that we let our Scott's Tots Patreon patrons choose this topic. We said,
yes.
You know, we set up a poll for which character should be our next focus, and they voted on Jan.
Let me pull up the results of that poll, mm-hmm. actually.
So thank you to all of our patrons and everyone who voted.
Yes. We'll probably keep doing this with other, when we have four or five options for next episodes, and y'all get to choose them, at least our tots do.
But what they don't know is that we get to choose who you get to vote for. So it'll be like James P. Albini, Rolf, Trevor.
Toby and Jan were in a dead heat for days, locked in. They kept going back and forth. Jan pulled away in the end in the last 500 meters of the 5K. Toby Toby gave up. But
that's very fitting.
Yeah. Nelly came in third, Todd Packer in a distant fourth.
Nelly, oh, that'll be a fun one.
But then the people in the comments, our tots, started pulling for Bob Vance, Vance Refrigeration. So
oh, that'd be good.
Interesting.
We'll have to get him in the mix on the next vote.
We'll join the conversation. Join us on Patreon. Become a Scott's Tot.
Quick note before we go, too. We're having, or not we, but our neighbors are having that god-awful Tree of Heaven removed, finally. From our backyard,
from backyard,
which is a giant tree that stinks and drops debris everywhere, and it's a weed. Mm-hmm. And it's so, anyways, chainsaws are happening in the background, so you might hear that. But I think that's kind of fitting for this topic. It feels like Jan's a bit of a chainsaw when it comes to Michael.
Welcome. I'm now cutting off Phyllis' head with a chainsaw.
I was just about to play that. Damn it.
I am now chopping off Phyllis' head with a chainsaw.
Jan Levinson,
welcome to the Utica Chainsaw Massacre. Go ahead, Sean.
Go ahead.
Jan is an extremely complex character within the show.
Yes.
I'm really excited to talk about her and discuss her. I think people are pretty torn on whether or not she's a villain or a victim. Much like the YouTube video I watched to prep for this, titled Villain or Victim by The Take. That's right.
That's a good place to start. Like the bird's eye view of Jan. I mean, what did you discover from your YouTube?
Your exhaustive YouTube research.
I didn't work for days.
Well, I think within the show, a lot of people... portrayed.
Oh, everybody, Oscar found a reason to look on WebMD.
Thank you for that. I think, you know, within the show, a lot of people consider her a villain. Like, in her introduction in the pilot, you get Todd Packer calling her the Ice Queen over the phone. And that's sort of how everyone seems to see her. They see her as cold and intimidating.
Well, Todd and Michael are the only perspectives we really get on Jan in the first couple seasons.
True.
Todd Packer, we cannot take his opinion with any amount of credit or validity, as he's a terrible man. And Michael is afraid of Jan, and I think she's unfairly cast as a villain early because it's sort of that thing. Like, if she was a man and acted the way she did, she'd be like, wow, strong boss, knows what he wants, good leader. But I think in the world of The Office, especially with Todd, who then influences how Michael thinks, it's like, oh, she's a bitch. When really she's, you know, at least early on in the show, she is tasked with being in charge of Michael Scott, which is not an easy job.
Exactly. She is given a very impossible task, which is to deal with Michael. We do get opinions from the other members of the office staff, specifically in the episode Boys and Girls. And this is after the events in The Client where Michael and Jan make out. And so that seems to color everyone's opinions on Jan. I think for me personally, when I was reviewing this or prepping for this episode, what I kind of saw is Jan is in a way kind of a metaphor for the corporate structure. Like at the beginning of the show, there's this big threat of downsizing, but corporate seems we have no reason to not trust corporate. And then Jan shows herself to be like, she has these moments where she has these lapses in judgment, maybe, where she like makes out with Michael or whatever it is. And then later on, as the show progresses, we have no reason to believe in anything that corporate does.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I definitely think that Jan is... she's portrayed as a villain in a lot of ways, but she is a victim. I mean, there's a lot of toxicity and misogyny within Dunder Mifflin, and Jan is very much the brunt of that.
When you meet all the other regional managers, it's just like,
oh my gosh,
yeah, that does not seem like a group that would treat Jan well or not think
and,
of her well.
And yes. The regional managers for sure, but like even the people in the office. I mean, I don't think that like the women really like her that much. They all joke about her hooking up with Michael. Kelly makes that joke to Jan's face in the conference room. Like, So if, you know, Michael says he got to second base with you, did you guys like get it, make a what deal or something? Mm-hmm. And they all kind of
a literal wink
to
the camera.
Yeah, exactly. And the way that everyone distributes the photo of her, her like nude photo from Jamaica, even Daryl, you know, it doesn't cross anyone's mind that it's like, oh, we shouldn't be looking at this, guys. This is not like everybody's in on the joke and thinks it's funny. And
you looked in my journal and photocopied it and distributed it. Yeah, they distribute Robert's list, but they do. They distribute a naked picture of Jan. I mean, it's really over mm-hmm. the line. And look, let's be clear here. I mean, Jan goes over the line, too. She should not be hooking up with a subordinate. Like, that's totally inappropriate, what she does. Kissing Michael in the parking lot of Chili's. That is not appropriate at all. She is his boss. I mean, mm-hmm. come on. I'm just saying, yes, she is a victim, but she also she displays a pattern of inappropriate behavior as well. And I think this comes down to what we get to later in seasons, which is I think there's a lot of pressure on her. There's a lot of people who don't treat her well, but she also kind of treats herself like she's a villain in a way. Like she doesn't, I think her self-care is not great. And I think we get snippets of this, especially in Cocktails, when she's talking about like her therapist and, you know, she's like, hey, you should chase some of the things that make you feel good. And for some reason, Michael makes her feel good, at least for a while. And so she does chase that. But again, I think in the first place, initiating a relationship with an employee and then one of your employees and keeping it secret for so long, that's not a good thing that a boss should do, if you're a man or a woman. Doesn't matter.
That's true.
I think villain or victim is almost it's too binary for Jan. I think Jan is way more complex than that. And I also think that like one big thing that happens with Jan, you know, it was something I picked up on as well, was that like the show really does seem to use her mental health as like a joke a lot of the time, you know?
Right.
Like Jan is crazy. That's like a joke that they tend to make again and again, which is I think unfortunate in, you know, in hindsight.
Karen says, like, you feel bad for her to Jim. Mm-hmm. Like, she's crazy.
But, you know, one thing I think about Jan is that she is so capable that, like, when she turns that on herself and is self-destructive, it goes really far, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, she's done a lot to ascend to this corporate position, this high-level position. And you talk about, like, a boys' club. There's no one else at the board level or anyone who's ever portrayed as a female character in mm-hmm. the shareholder meeting, even though Jan's not with the company at that point. Like, that room is all men, you know? And so she's very capable. But then when she turns that on herself and does engage in self-destructive behavior, like, it goes very far. And it really, like when she wants to waste time, as David Wallace says, you smoke in your office constantly. You spend all day online shopping. You go to Scottsdale far too often. You go to Scranton way too much. So there's elements of that that happen when she does that, you know. But like there are moments when she's so competent, and she does that again by raising to the level of Scranton White Pages, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing about Jan that stood out to me watching this.
She goes after what she wants and she gets it. You know, she dresses for the job she wants, not the job she has. Mm-hmm. And I think by the end of the show, it certainly circles back to that, where it's like she wants to be a mother. She does that. She gets her career back. She gets her life back. You know, I think Michael Scott, that was a difficult relationship and a tough time for her. not forget coming off the heels of what sounds like a pretty complicated, messy divorce.
That's one interesting thing is to what extent Michael factors into the self-destruction, you know, like, does he accelerate it? Does he mitigate it because he offers to, you know, you can stay at my place and go to Scranton. She says, no, this could work. I can wear stretchy pants to be there when you get home at 5:15. So like to what
they
you know,
want such vastly different things.
Yeah.
When they first come together, it was never going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's just desperate for any amount of affection that will lead to the white picket fence life. And as Jan says, she's collapsing in on herself like a dying star.
That's right.
So, yeah, she's a very complicated character. And, like, yeah, honestly, at least for the first few seasons, I mean, she's such a huge part of the plot. She's such a huge part of what makes Michael gives him motivation and doesn't, and make the decisions he makes. And she's very involved early on. And that comes out of, you know, a little bit. I mean, this is established in early in the BBC office, but there, David Brent's boss is a female, very strong woman who also is, you know, he does not take her seriously sometimes because he's very misogynistic. And that DNA is carried over into this version of The Office. In season one, Jan is all business, man. She's great. She's like not putting up with Michael, and that he slowly breaks that down, and it crumbles pretty quickly.
You have these very clear moments where Jan is giving Michael a very direct sort of directive, or directive, something very specific that he has to do: pick a healthcare plan, fire someone, you know. Mm-hmm. And Michael just writhes under that, and he can't execute what he has to do from the corporate side. Like that is so much of the tension in the early.
Jan
seasons.
Just needs that name, Michael.
I think that you get snippets of it, but I think that Jan is dealing with like insubordination and misogyny on from all directions while she's working at Dunder Mifflin. Yes. And so I think that, you know, the idea that it's like, oh, well, like, you know, it's her mental health. She's just crazy. She can't take the stress of it. I think there's an argument for it's Dunder Mifflin drove her crazy. Like, it's just it's such
corporate America, man.
Yeah. DMI, which stands for dummies, morons, and idiots. It's not a well-run company. It's not a good place for Jan.
Look at what it did to Ryan in 1 year, much less Jan in her career.
There you
go. 1 year, that dude went from, you know, doing coke in high-rises in New York to working at a bowling alley.
There you go.
Ryan. Love the beard. Keep it forever. I think another thing too that they kind of layer in there is that when Jan talks about after her
whoops.
You are so right.
Nice.
When she's driving back with Michael, she mentions that the pain medications after her her boob job really caused these crazy mood swings too. So you layer on that element as well. Like there's just a lot going on with her. But I think that's a really interesting point that Dunder Mifflin drove her crazy. I hadn't thought about it in that sort of a term before. You'd think Michael alone, maybe, but maybe it's the rest of the corporate structure as well. Sure. Like you've got that from the corporate side, and then you have Michael as your boss or as your employee. Not to mention what we see from Craig is similarly hard to manage.
Let's just talk about that scene briefly, because it's like, I mean, Michael should be fired after that. Craig certainly should be fired after that. I don't know if he is. I hope. I don't think we ever see him again or hear from him again.
Do you mean for the joke that he makes, Michael?
It's Craig who's like, well, God, like, you know, maybe I should have slept with you too.
Yeah. Well, so like, yeah, Michael makes the joke. Craig, So Michael has the video, but he does have the numbers, and Craig doesn't have anything, you know?
Right.
And but Jan just kind of mentions like, this is not a good look for you and the survival of your branch.
Yeah.
There is a great Michael Jan moment where that reminds me, and sorry if I'm taking it away, but in the Ben Franklin episode where he calls to confess that he went to a bachelor party at work, and he's like, so you're not mad at me? And she's like, I'm closer to firing you.
but I mean, just like, if you just look at that little interaction as maybe an example of what Jan has to deal with all the time, which is just a room full of guys who don't get it, who make jokes, who think it's no big deal. And, you know, she just keeps moving forward.
The other thing that happens in the first three seasons with her, and again, this is more tied to Dunder Mifflin also driving her crazy, is almost like every time she allows herself to be happy or allows herself to let her hair down a little bit, she seems to, something goes wrong or she gets hurt in some way. I mean, notably, obviously in The Client, like that great, Michael makes that sale and she spends hours at Chili's waiting for it to happen. It finally does. She's overjoyed when it does, but, you know, reacts to it by, you know, making out with Michael. And that leads to Michael getting hurt and eventually Jan getting hurt. Mm-hmm. Then casino night. I mean, Carol's there. She shows up. She has her overnight bag. That doesn't work. It's like she's like, you know, maybe I'll go and maybe I'll just see what happens. And she allows herself that, and then it's just like, oh, now there's this other woman here. Michael's being, you know, Michael's got two queens on casino night. That's a hand she doesn't want a part of. This just continues sort of on and on.
There's
into the convention, into the coup. I mean, all this just keeps happening to her over and over again.
At the end of Valentine's Day, when she talks to Michael, there are a lot of Michael saves the day moments, you know, the client. And in the Valentine's Day episode as well, where he appeals to David Wallace, and Jan's like, you can't be serious. He goes, sure, you know, don't call me Shirley, airplane. And then Michael does make the save with David. Not that he calls Craig not the sharpest tool in the shed, although he is a tool. But then Jan is standing at Michael at the elevator, and she kisses him, and she turns and looks back and just looks, sees the camera, and her face falls, and the elevator doors just close on Michael right behind her. That's another thing. Like, her, like, Melora Hardin did such a good job with this role. And even, like, her small reaction faces are so, so strong. Like, she does really great.
She must have had a great, what a fun role to play. It must have been a great time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I rewatched a few episodes for this, but obviously in the dinner party.
Yes.
The satisfaction and the deliciousness that she takes when she looks at Pam after she's suspecting Michael. And she's so patient at looking at Pam and smiling and making little, just evil little moves on her. And it's so fun to watch. She does such a good job with it.
I love how intimidating she can be.
Oh.
Like, she's wearing...
Her name.
Yeah.
Spell her name, Pam. A lot of adults can't even spell Astrid.
A-X? Don't patronize me. I hate this. I'm sorry. You're better.
Spell her name, Pam.
Yeah.
It's so hardcore.
Yeah.
And she does... She's doing that all through dinner party, too.
Well, and another... Like, I noticed as well at the client... In the client, when they make the sale, the way that she smiles at Michael is so... genuine and so real, and it's right at the beginning of their entanglement. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's such a great scene, such a great bit of acting, just that look.
There's very few tender moments overall with Jan, at least early on. I mean, I think we see her with Astrid later, and she's a different person by then.
Money.
But in Money, I mean, and that comes out of even at the end of, say, Dinner Party, when we see her fixing, you know, the Dundee. Mm-hmm. She's more tender when she sits on the train with Michael. There's a few moments, like you said, making that sale. And of course, even a moment in the deposition, where she has a couple moments where she's very pleased with Michael, that he's, you know, saying the things that she wants him to say.
He's above average at many things, like ice skating. Mm-hmm. He's a very good ice skater. I was laughing because when you talk about tender moments, like the nature of being with Michael, whether as an employer or an employee, or his partner, is that he's going to ruin it. So even with that tender scene on the train where she's like, you know, great. That is a guy worth staying with. So where's this train going? I think the engineer left. Michael.
I'm amazed, by the way, at that moment. I'm amazed that he says engineer and not conductor. I feel like Michael would say conductor.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I agree.
Like a storybook type understanding of a train.
One thing that I've been picking up on and rewatching the last few weeks for our episodes is the way that Steve Carell can punctuate Michael moments with breathing in. He just goes, it's hard to do it. And I'm like, you know, like he says, oh, Toby, what are you doing in here? This is an orientation, not a boreentation. Then he looks at the camera, just, like he breathes in, like he's like about to start laughing. Like he's giving you that cue. A lot of Jan moments are like that, where he's making jokes with Jan and that kind of thing.
But, yeah. One of the other aspects of Jan that the writers focus on, and maybe this says even more, this says a lot about just the way a lot of female characters are written, but they focus on her sex life a lot. Like that comes up several times in the show, or sort of the aggressive sexual things that Jan tends towards. I mean, even this latest season 9, when Clark compares it to having sex with a swarm of bees that always finds something wrong with a hotel room. But even into when Michael's giving the tour and you see the camera, and then in Women's Appreciation before that, way before Dinner Party, when Michael's trying to break up with Jan and starts talking about what goes on between the sheets to all the women at the office. And they're like, Michael, she's being abusive to you and you need to stop.
Yeah. They have the video camera in their room.
Correct. So again, this goes back to this complexity of Jan, where it's like she's victimized a lot, but she's also the things that she does to Michael are not great, and the ways that she treats him is pretty abusive. And I think that might come from the way she's treated a lot, and it sort of translates into Michael. I mean, that's what, right? That's the cycle of abuse going on. But that whole scene, recording, playing it back with her therapist to improve his form.
Oh, yeah, doctor. I mean, it's just who's Dr. Perry? I love that. Yeah. You mentioned Clark. He also says women reach their sexual peak at whatever age Jan was last week. Remember, Clark, he gave you everything.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? I know for me, mental health always felt like I was getting in my own way. And seeing a therapist is something that's been a huge unlock for me. It's been a game changer for me, and I highly, highly recommend it to basically everyone. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. Visit BetterHelp.com/Scott. That's Better, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Special offer for the Michael Scott Podcast Company listeners. Get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Scott. That's BetterHelp.com/S-C-O-T-T. Where's Scott?
Yeah, that was better.
Okay, yeah.
We also suspect that Jan and Hunter had a thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Her assistant. That song is about her. That's a fan theory out there.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I don't...
Oh, obviously.
I don't think it's much of a theory, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Can I tell you something? This is kind of embarrassing, but I hope it'll make you laugh. For the longest time, instead of That One Night, I thought Hunter was singing That Was Nice.
That was nice.
You made everything all right.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, the hug she gives Hunter when she's fired from Dunder Mifflin.
Good luck with your band. Don't ever let them change you.
Don't let them change you.
Yeah. Then she just flips them off.
The interplay between Michael and Jan is just the best. Rewatching the early episodes to try to get a sense of how Jan came in at the beginning of the show, I thought to myself, like, the funniest thing they could have done with this from a writing perspective is to have her become involved with Michael romantically.
Yeah.
Because she's so exhausted by him so often that, like, it's really funny to have that same dynamic happen in a romantic relationship. Like in the Cocktails episode when he's like, they're just on totally different pages. When they're in the car and she makes that call. Am I on speakerphone? No. Mm-hmm. You know?
Or when she drags him into the bathroom and she's just like,
no means please don't. I know. Being inappropriate. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Right there.
I thought this is where you liked your alone time.
I know.
Hey, this is the moment for that clip. So I sent this to Alex and Sean because I don't think they're familiar. When Michael says, "I love this woman," mm-hmm. it's a reference to this diamond commercial from a couple years prior. Oh, I'm almost positive.
Oh, yeah. From 2004.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Should we listen to it?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. Happy anniversary, honey.
Yeah, happy anniversary.
There's something I gotta do.
Oh, yeah?
What? This will have to do.
I love this man.
Oh, God.
I love him.
Ooh. Wait, so he shouts it out, and then she's like, "Stop! What are you doing?"
Only Alex could watch the video because I sent it to him so we could play it through our headphones.
Yeah,
I'll send it to you too, Shot. They're like in a square.
Yeah, it appears they're on
Italy or something. There's like a lot of Europe pigeons vacation. Around.
There's a lot of birds.
Yeah, and the guy goes, "I love this woman." Yeah, and I'm almost positive that's what Michael is referencing.
Oh, guaranteed. Yeah. That's so funny. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I guess this will have to do. And pulls a diamond ring out just raw out of his pocket. No case.
I
ruined that gift. Jeez. She's like, stop! What are you doing?
This is good. It's good for me that I get to use my 2000s references.
Yeah. 04.
Yeah. 04. Yeah.
I love that I'm still discovering the things that Michael references. He makes so many little pop culture references that are so topical for the time that I'm still learning.
I was thinking about in Boys and Girls when he talks about the Ally McBeal woman, which is like, Ally McBeal went off the air in 2002, so 20 years ago now.
Wow.
You know, isn't that wild? Yeah.
Wow.
Wild stuff.
But yeah, I love the way that Michael and Jan like frustrate each other, and the way that Michael is constantly kind of undercutting Jan, not on purpose, you know, like when he insists on taking the top down. When you said Alex, when she decides to let her hair down, I thought you were referring to when they take the top down on Michael's convertible.
Oh yeah.
And her hair is all messy in the, tan almost everywhere. Jan almost everywhere.
Teehee.
Diary.
the look of true bewilderment when they're talking about Ryan, who you describe as being just like Jan. What is it? being just as hot as Jan, but in a different way. Jan's true confusion.
Yes. Tough times for Jan there. Yeah.
You know, I was thinking about this in the Dunder Mifflin Infinity episode. I think that's when it is. It's at the beginning of season four. When Jan is like, yeah, hope he gets hit with an ageism suit. And Michael's like, oh, what is that? I really wish there was more of Jan coaching Michael on how to interact with Ryan. I feel like that could have been a great dynamic.
Kind of pulling the strings.
There are times, I think there's a deleted scene where she's like, are you reading the Wall Street Journal every day? Like we agreed you would.
That's like when Jim kind of shames Michael for not having a subscription to the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, the wall.
I mean, speaking of undercutting, I mean, Jan, she is undercut a lot, and she in turn undercuts Michael several times, most notably not telling Michael when Astrid is born, despite his very clear interest in that. Now,
just even that
she doesn't know Michael anything with that because that was her own thing. But Michael's trying to be so supportive and present because that's all he wants. Mm-hmm. And when she does that, I mean, she kind of ends things with Michael with honestly a gift, which is basically pushing Michael out the door by saying, hey, don't go out with Holly. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing now Michael wants to do because Jan said that, which is sort of echoing what Jan even got into the relationship with Michael in the first place, which is like, you know, when your parents get mad at you about something and like to get them back, you want to
do
what they tell you not to. That's exactly what she then does to Michael. And Michael's like, goes right into Holly's arms.
Yeah. Let's say there's an evil queen and a princess, right? Yes. Isn't that her whole thing, that she's the queen and the princess?
Michael's so lost in that illusion. Yeah.
But no, that's a really good point, is that when Michael, In the Goodbye Toby episode, Michael is so he's so enamored with Holly, he goes and finds Jan, and Jan is pregnant. And you cheated on me when I specifically asked you not to. He talks about wearing two condoms.
Oh my god!
And then Jan
with the three,
And then Jan says, "If I were 22 and I had time to have a lot of kids, why not let Michael have a shot at one? But I need to make this one count." Like she's very brutal with that decision making. Yeah.
Look, that's like, she's about the bottom line. That was her job. That's what she does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She gets results, and she's treating her pregnancy the exact same way. I don't have time for love. I got to make this count.
I think one thing that the baby shower episode kind of illustrates, and let me know what you think about this, but like, I feel like she's less crazy and more strange, which is better, you know?
Mm.
Like, she's just really weird as a mom. Like, singing the Son of a Preacher's Man and stuff. Yeah. Like, that's not a crazy thing. It's just like a
you
very strange thing to do.
You might have learned shapes or blocks or clocks or colors.
I love the way she sings Son of a Preacher Man. That'll probably be the outro music to this episode, if I had to guess. So you can stick around for that. But when she goes, they're like... looking to see how much he's grown. Like, she goes all the way.
The look that not was to in mention, his eyes.
Not to mention, speaking of that, the video she makes from Astrid's perspective singing a song to Mommy. Yeah. I mean, unhinged. It's just completely bizarre. And Pam is like, what is happening right now?
That's one of the best one of the best memes of The Office is that template.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's fine. No, that's it.
Okay, but just, yeah, and often it's like me telling my friends about The Office while we're watching it, and then, or quoting The Office while we're watching it, and then Pam is just kind of horrified on the other side.
Yeah.
It's the absolute best, yeah.
Yeah, her chaos evolves into more peculiarities, and mainly just singing.
Yeah.
And she's, like, established herself. She's sort of, it seems like she's made a full-on decision of, like, I don't really want a man in my life because I don't need it, don't want it, not going to be one. It's me and Astrid versus the world. She totally embraces that. Good for her. wish she should have done that sooner and, you know, left the charred Michael Scott on the side of the highway.
Well, I loved, we're talking about these Astrid songs, and when, since it's Sex Ed in season 7, when Michael or Jan just looks him right in the eye and says, Michael Scott, you want to postmortem?
Yes.
Right? You want to dig into a relationship, see what killed it? Okay, I'm in. And so, you know, they have this long thing. And then, she goes into the thing about the princess and the queen.
Thought about it. I'm in.
And while she's singing the song to Astrid, Michael just goes, I have herpes.
Yeah, that's
just
right.
Just to eject out of the moment.
Yeah. He's like, I'm out.
Eject.
those ripcord moments.
Yeah. I have herpes. Yeah. And like that's a Michael moment where he's like rethinking his judgment and the way that he used to thought. Mm-hmm. And I love that he says, you know, I don't know if I trust Jan's judgment. And Dwight says, Jan knows paper.
It's true. I mean, Michael is... Michael just is totally hard on his sleeve. He thinks with his heart first and his head second. And Jan seems to be the other way around, but they occasionally both go with their gut, which is what leads them together in the first place. But yeah, I mean, that's totally what Michael wants. I mean, that's all proven when he realizes he has this, I have no connection to Astrid. He doesn't feel anything when she's around. And he's sort of like, it's never been clearer. Like, I need, Holly's the one, and whatever I had with Jan was just me chasing something I was never going to have.
Well, he decides there's no connection to Astrid by holding her baby carrier.
Yeah.
And then one of the better montages in the show is of is of Michael talking about trying to hold a baby every day and just the interactions of him holding babies.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Such a great little series of shots. And then I think... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No.
Oh, well... I do think that it's a good way that Jan exits the show. So, I mean, obviously in The Whale, she's trying to make this last sort of gambit for David Wallace. Like, she wanted Wallace to be the one who comes in and tells Molly not to use her name. And Dwight, after being coached by the women of the office about how to sell the women, has to abandon all of that and go back to his instincts, and he brings in Clark, right? All that happens.
Yeah.
But then the very end of the show, the last lines that Jan gets in the show, I think, are in Couples Discount, when Andy comes back surprisingly, and he's just talking to Dwight, like, oh, wow, you made this big sale to Jan. He's like, oh, but you didn't clear this pricing with me. And he calls her, and she says, you're seriously calling me after we signed the deal to gouge me for more money? Well, Nardog, there's a clause that allows me to opt out after 30 days, so I'm going to exit that. Have Angela send me a final invoice. And that's the end of Jan, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's something I think that I like that she gets to go out on that note where she's like, yeah, I'm done with this. I'm done with Dunder Mifflin. Yeah.
Final chop of the axe.
Yeah, exactly. I'm taking my business elsewhere. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I love that she calls him Nardog. That's great.
Well, Nardog.
Yeah.
Any other?
You're murdering the Nardog.
Before we move on to trivia, any other favorite moments from Jan?
I mean, we talked a lot about Jan and Michael specifically, and rightfully so, but there are a lot of great moments where Jan is interacting with other characters, and like she, I think Karen in the Cocktails episode says, "Hey, Jan," she says, "not good." Like, Jan has a lot of interactions like that. And she has some good ones with Jim too about the transfer and that kind of thing. But I just, I love that where she's like, she just kind of steamrolls Pam. I love that in that dynamic. It's always so funny. Like,
And, I mean, just the way she treats, she does that again in reception when Ronnie's there. And Ronnie's like, "Hi," and she just slaps the thing down. She's like, "I need 100 copies of this in canary yellow." And she's making Serenity by Jan posters. Right. Like, it's not Dunder Mifflin business.
No.
And she's like, she's just like, "I'm going to make you do this for me, and I know that you shouldn't. I don't care." Well, canary yellow. Go.
To tag off of that, what about, she seems to have a good dynamic with Kevin. "Hey, Jan, how's the candle game?" And then
taking names,
and then like earlier he runs into her at Garrity's, and enough of a conversation where Kevin is able to get her to wait for Michael to get there.
Well, it feels like when they're walking out together that they've had a very fruitful close conversation.
That's so
I love that as an unlikely friendship, Jan and Kevin.
Yeah,
although
he's the father of her child.
Maybe, that's right.
He's donated to the sperm bank
by the IHOP. That's an deleted scene where it's like, "You could just let me know personally if you'd like her to have a brother or sister."
There's some deep...
It's just nice to win one.
There's some deep memes out there about Kevin being Ashton Kutcher, being Astrid's father. I love it.
It's not Astrid Kutcher. Kevin Malone.
There you go.
I think after this episode, Jan is one of my favorite characters in The Office. She is like,
oh my God.
Like, she's very well acted. Like, her part is really interesting. Like, the way she comes in and out of the show is kind of cool, you know? What a great character.
I think she
she's also the only other person kind of on the same wavelength as Dwight in terms of, we need characters that take this seriously, that take the job, take the company very seriously. Mm-hmm. And so she's sort of a desperate, like, you need that other, like, Dwight does a lot of that, but Jan comes in as, like, the hammer a lot of times to bring that to the show.
Definitely.
That's a great dynamic, too, when he appeals to her in the coup, and she just kind of absorbs it, and then it's like, "Michael, I just had an interesting conversation with one of your employees." Like, she does not budge when Dwight comes at her, sawing his waffles in half.
Yeah, speaking of her interacting with other characters, that entire interaction with Dwight is so fabulous. Mm-hmm. There's an Ann Taylor outlet near here. Where is it?
It's officially not your job. All those phone conversations.
Yeah.
Dwight, let me tell you, you are not a manager of anything. Well, that's not entirely true. Michael put me in charge of picking the new healthcare plan. And then the tag to that episode, when Michael is failing to improv and everyone walks out the door, Dwight just says, Jan wants you to call her. But yeah.
I just finish with this? There's a paragraph about her on Dunderpedia that's
nice.
Just really nice. And I'd like to finish it with this. Starts with what she drives. She initially drives a Volvo S80 and trades it in with Michael Sebring for a shared Porsche Boxster. She smokes in stressful situations and indulges in self-destructive tendencies with poor judgment in spite of her inherent competence and professional attitude. She demonstrates the strong and often fetishist sexuality, which sometimes intimidates Michael, such as when revealed in women's appreciation that Jan does not always abide by their safety word, foliage. It is implied that she may have taken the virginity of her assistant Hunter, of whom Michael is jealous.
That was nice.
Wow. Yeah. That covers a lot.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's just the bad stuff, but what a resume. Good job, Jan.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. Jan Levinson. Fabulous, fabulous character. Let's move on to trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
All right. This week's trivia was sent to us by Tristan out in Tennessee. Tristan says, "I tried to make this one tough, but I threw in a couple funny, easier ones as well." This trivia is based on Money, Part 1, okay. Season 4, Episode 7.
Oh.
All right, question 1.
My fave.
Dwight says that TripAdvisor is the lifeblood of the agritourism industry. A couple of bad reviews and you may as well close up shop. That's what took down the blank.
Stock in. cutest little celery farm you ever did see. Yeah.
Asparagus farm, but very good.
Those who can't farm, farm celery.
Yeah, that's right.
Dang it.
Question two, in the parking lot, Dwight is handing Angela items that she had left at his farm. This is after they are broken up. What items does he hand her? There are three. Nope.
Toothbrush.
No.
A little figurine?
No.
Cat collar.
I'm going to say...
Sleeping cardigan.
That is one, yes.
Okay, yeah. Oh, nice. Hang on now.
A book?
No.
Sleeping cardigan.
I'm about to give it to you.
I can't think of any others.
All right. One cardigan, one sleeping cardigan, and one sleep apnea mask.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Okay. All right. Question three. Dwight says he is relieved that he and his girlfriend have broken up. It gives him the chance to sow his wild oats, rewarded to him from family tradition after having sex with another female. What does Dwight say you can do with said oats?
You can plant them. Okay. You can make oatmeal.
Anything you want. Those are your oats.
Yeah.
I'll give it to you. You can use those oats to make oatmeal, bread, whatever you want. I don't care. They're your oats. Question four. How many names do Jim and Pam come up with for Shroot Farms, and what are they?
Well, yeah, let's just come up with
Radish Inn.
Yeah. Radish Inn, yeah.
Beats Motel.
Yep.
Embassy Beats.
Embassy Beats.
Yep.
And then the one that Jim comes up with, which is,
it's not as good.
Beats Hotel.
Yeah, he just says Borscht Hotel.
Borscht Hotel.
And she's like, eh. Mm-hmm. Question five. Shroot Farms has three rooms, which all have different themes. What are the themes?
Irrigation, nighttime, America.
Nice. How long has Moe's been having nightmares?
Ever since the storm.
What
century is this?
Why did Jan say she didn't go to yoga?
I just didn't.
I just didn't.
Yeah,
you drive.
It.
I had too much wine. if she gets there and says, "You drive," I had too much wine.
I know. She drove there. Yeah.
Well, the car is kind of parked sideways. Like she just clearly just didn't care about a spot.
Veered off
that's,
of the road.
I think that's the all-time low for Jen.
Yes.
That scene.
Yes.
I've talked about that before, but the glare she gives the camera is my favorite Jan moment as she circles the car and she gets a little too close to the camera.
Well, it's improv. Why don't you just pretend you have a car?
Yeah.
I just didn't.
Question eight.
I should have had that drop ready. I apologize. That's a good
all
one.
Right. Question eight. The morning of Michael's PowerPoint presentation, four characters yawn when Michael walks into the office. Who are they? And in what order do they yawn?
Oh, wow.
Pam, then Jim.
Then Michael.
Then Mike. No, then Dwight, then Michael.
It's Pam, then Michael, then Jim, then Dwight.
Ah.
I don't even know what this is referring to. I can't remember for some reason.
Well, they all have a long night.
They were all up the night before.
Right.
Michael was doing his second job. Jim and Pam were at the farm.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Reading
to
them at the farm.
That's right.
Somewhere
that's
during a table making demonstration, Moe's is yawning too. He also had a long night.
All right. One more question here. Oh, no. Two more questions. Okay. Michael opens PowerPoint for the first time, and PowerPoint's estimated time to update says 12 minutes. With that information, Michael tells everyone it should take how long to update?
1 or 2 minutes.
Five or ten minutes.
Yeah. Okay.
Finally,
PowerPoint.
Question 10.
PowerPoint.
What is the name of Michael's boss at the Lipofedrin Diet Pill Company?
Nick Figaro.
Yeah, Nick Figaro.
Mr. Figaro. Nice work. Guys, and nice work. Tristan, thank you so much for sending in that trivia. If you would like to send us trivia, you can. Email us at mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. You can also call us and leave us a message. We love to play them on the show, 503-694-9314. We're on Facebook and Instagram. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. And we're on Patreon, patreon.com/Michael Scott. You can become a Scott's Tot for $5 a month. And you can influence what we talk about now. We're going to start polling the Scott's Tots and seeing what they want to hear.
This month, too, we'll do our first playlist post on there where we're each going to share things we read, listened, and watched. Because you don't need other content than our podcast, but if you do or you want to recommend it to someone else, we'll have those for you as well. Yep. Also, You are probably already saw this because you already subscribed to our show or saw our feed, but we did release Biscuits with the Boss, a 4-part podcast about Ted Lasso, Edwin's brainchild. We had a lot of fun. And season 2 comes out.
Will have already come out by the time this comes out.
Will have already come out. So watch Ted Lasso. Listen along. It's only 4 episodes, our podcast. The show is 10 episodes, but a little shout out. A little shout out to that sideshow.
Yes, indeedy.
That was a fun day. And hopefully we'll need to revisit season 2 at some point. But anyway. Yeah. Well, hey, but thank you for listening. We really, truly appreciate everyone listening, interacting with us, for voting on this episode topic, which is super cool. It's fun to get that insight from people about what they want to hear from us. And, you know, just thank you again. We really appreciate it. Take care. Stay safe. We'll see you next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the zombie.
Yes, sir.
Talk to you later, Jan.
Stealing kisses from me on the sly. Taking time to make time. Telling me that he's all mine. Learning from each other's knowing. Looking to see how much we've grown.